Today, we are reviewing an academic white paper that applies Humberto Mazzarana's concept of biological natural drift to the future of medicine, arguing that chronic diseases actually stem from a civilizational drift disrupting our organism-niche relations. Delaying the clinical application of natural drift until after dense theoretical biology weakens the initial hook for medical practitioners.
Yeah, I noticed that structural choice right away. I mean, the setup is incredibly ambitious, obviously drawing so heavily on Mazzarana's theories of structural determinism and autopoiesis in part two.
Right.
And it essentially lays out the biological ground rules for how organisms and their niches co-arise. But making medical practitioners wade through all that heavy theory before seeing any practical clinical payoff, it's going to lose the exact audience this paper desperately needs to reach.
Absolutely. The weakness here is that the paper requires the reader to wade through pages of highly abstract concepts, like ontogenic structural drift and epigenesis and structural coupling, before ever grounding those ideas in a relatable high-stakes clinical scenario.
Right, which risks losing the attention of practical medical professionals entirely.
Exactly. You are asking a very practical audience, you know, active clinicians, public health officials, policymakers, to hold a massive amount of abstract theory in their working memory without giving them a reason to care yet.
Let me play devil's advocate here for a second, though.
Sure.
If we lead with a failing healthcare model, like just jumping straight into the clinical frustrations, don't we risk the reader dismissing this as just another op-ed complaining about the medical system? Like, without offering real science? Don't we need that dense theory up front to prove the author actually has the scientific credibility to propose this massive new framework?
I totally see why an author would think that, but I completely disagree with that approach for this specific audience. I mean, think of it like teaching navigation. You don't start with the complex astrophysics of the stars.
Right.
You start with a lost ship. If the reader feels the urgency of the lost ship, which in this case is the failing clinical model, they will practically beg you to teach them the astrophysics of natural drift to find their way out.
Oh, I like that analogy. The theory needs to be the rescue, not a prerequisite reading assignment.
Exactly. So my suggestion is to restructure the opening to immediately anchor the biological theory in a concrete medical failure. Use the philosophy only as the tool to explain exactly why the failure occurred.
Okay, so how do we actually execute that on the page? How do we invert that flow?
Well, for a concrete example, we should move the clinical doorway example of the type 2 diabetes patient out of the middle parts of the text and place it squarely in the introduction.
Oh, that diabetes example is so good too?
It's brilliant, but right now it's buried. Show the patient returning to the clinic with the exact same elevated HbA1c, despite total medication compliance. Build that visceral frustration of the clinician.
Right, the realization that just prescribing insulin isn't fixing the environment that's making the patient sick in the first place.
Precisely. And then, and only then, you introduce the concept of the organism-niche relation. You use it to explain why treating the body without treating the food and labor niche repeatedly fails.
That's clearly laid out. I wonder, though, if we've considered how pulling the field of viability examples to the very front might completely change the reader's emotional investment.
It changes everything. You shift the reader's posture from, you know, passive academic absorption to active clinical problem solving.
Yeah, public health professionals already know the system is failing them in chronic care. Validate their daily clinical frustration on the very first page, and they'll follow you through any amount of dense biological theory.
Because you've promised them a new lens to solve a real-world problem. Which leads right into our next issue, because grounding the theory in a clinical reality right away will naturally help solve the next challenge, which is navigating the highly specialized vocabulary.
Oh, the vocabulary. Yeah, let's look closely at the section discussing human beings as biocultural drifters.
Right.
It relies so heavily on bespoke terminology, things like ontogenic phenotype, autopoietic inflation, and structural determinism.
And over-reliance on specialized philosophical jargon creates a barrier to entry for the exact public health and policy professionals the paper aims to persuade.
It really does. The weakness is that the text frequently uses rigid Maturana-specific terminology in total isolation.
Right. And while the piece does include a really helpful translation table, separating the plain language clinical equivalents from the prose forces the reader to constantly context switch.
Which just skyrockets the cognitive load. I mean, do you know what happens to a busy hospital administrator when they have to flip to an appendix to understand the subject of a sentence?
They close the PDF.
Exactly. Holding a definition in your working memory while trying to parse a dense philosophical argument, it just disrupts the rhythm of reading entirely.
It kills the momentum. So the suggestion here is to integrate the plain language clinical translations directly into the narrative prose alongside the philosophical terms,
creating an immediate, seamless bridge between the two vocabularies.
Yes, without diluting the underlying science.
Is the connection between the abstract vocabulary and the clinical reality fully established in the material? Or is that an area to potentially bolster by merging those translation tables into the active paragraphs?
That's exactly the area to bolster. I mean, I can see what the author is going for here, trying to maintain academic rigor, but let's look at how we can strengthen this with a concrete example.
Okay.
Right now, instead of writing, a lineage persists when an ontogenic phenotype ontogenic niche relation is conserved, revise the prose to say, a lineage, whether it's a family history of diabetes, or a bacterial strain resisting antibiotics, persists when a specific way of living is conserved.
Oh, wow, yeah. You keep the technical framework, but you immediately land the clinical equivalent right inside the dashes. It grounds the abstraction instantly.
Exactly. Or, you know, replace standalone uses of structural coupling with paired phrases. Like, write something like, through structural coupling, such as how the body biologically remembers a history of poverty, sleep loss, or pollution.
That is so much stronger. By giving them the clinical anchor in the same breath as the jargon, you actively train their brain.
You really do.
After two or three times of reading it that way, they'll see structural coupling, and their brain will automatically visualize a patient returning to a polluted neighborhood.
Right. You give them the keys to the philosophical house right at the front door, rather than hiding them in a lockbox on page 35.
And we know the author is capable of this.
Oh, definitely.
Because the paper's brilliant insight that the body is field carrying is a perfect example of a complex idea stated beautifully and simply.
Yes, it is visceral, evocative, and it requires zero translation tables to understand. The text just needs more of that exact directness when handling the heavier Maturana terminology.
Streamlining this terminology will be especially critical when the paper scales its focus upward from individual biology to the sweeping macro-level history of human civilization.
Which brings us to the third big area. As I understand it from the notes, the argument here is that humanity has moved through various civilizational drifts.
Right, from foraging and agriculture to urban state and axial ethical, all the way to industrial fossil and digital financial drifts.
The exhaustive historical sweep of human civilization dilutes the core medical argument by venturing too far into general anthropology.
The historical research here is undeniably rigorous, though. The author has put immense thought into tracking the unbroken line of human development.
They have. But the weakness is that the section outlining the eight historical civilizational drifts attempts to summarize all of human history. This broad scope acts as a detour.
A massive detour.
Yeah, distracting from the paper's primary focus on actionable modern One Health and biosphere anthroposphere medicine.
But isn't understanding the origins of human coordination essential to proving the concept of natural drift? I mean, the whole point of Maturana's framework is that it's historical, right?
Well, yes.
It's a continuous, unbroken lineage of structural coupling. Is there a risk that focusing so broadly on the entirety of human history might overlook the immediate urgency of the modern medical crisis the paper is trying to solve?
That's exactly the risk. It's like a camera. The lens has zoomed out so far to capture all of human history that the patient in the exam room is no longer visible in the frame.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
We have to zoom back in. My suggestion is to compress the historical timeline to focus sharply and exclusively on how specific civilizational shifts created direct, tangible, new disease ecologies.
So if a section of history isn't actively casting a shadow on the modern patient's biology, it shouldn't be in the shot.
Exactly.
How do we compress this millennia-spanning timeline without losing the premise of civilizational drift, though? Give me some concrete examples of what that looks like.
Sure. Let's look at the urban estate and axial ethical drifts.
Okay.
Condense them into a single brief transition about how early human coordination created new sanitation burdens. You don't need the political or ethical philosophy of the time. You just need the disease ecology.
Right. Just when we moved into cities, our structural coupling with the environment brought new sanitation pathogens.
Yes. And then conversely, focus heavily on the industrial, fossil, and digital financial drifts. Explicitly tie those specific eras to the modern crises of chronic inflammation, metabolic syndrome, and attention capture.
So keep the focus strictly on how those eras produce the exact pathologies the field of viability framework seeks to diagnose today.
Exactly. It really comes down to narrative proportion. You aren't deleting the history because it's inaccurate. You're pruning it so the core thesis can actually thrive.
By tightening that historical sweep to focus purely on the evolution of disease ecologies, the author creates a relentless driving argument that leads the reader straight into the necessity of this new medical framework.
And that relentless drive is exactly what this material needs. To summarize, this is a deeply profound piece of writing with incredible potential to reframe modern medicine. It challenges the fundamental ways we view the intersection of biology, policy, and human behavior.
The theoretical underpinnings are incredibly sound. It just needs that structural and stylistic calibration so the message really lands.
Right. So to maximize its impact, the author should invert the structure to lead with a high-stakes clinical case study, seamlessly pair the Mascherano-specific jargon with plain language medical equivalents directly in the prose, and condense the historical anthropology section to focus strictly on the evolution of disease ecology.
The underlying ideas are far too important not to be delivered with maximum clarity. We would love to see how these revisions take shape. Please submit your revised work back to us for another critique.